Buddy Craig Button will join us here in a moment. And I think Craig might be a voter for the awards. We talked about that yesterday. You vote on the Coach of the Year, right?
Yeah, I get Coach of the Year and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't get to do the other ones. So I like when people come out and put their name on it.
So do I. Why not?
Put Herm Edwards, put your name on it. Because,
absolutely.
Listen, you have the privilege, I guess, or responsibility, or burden, whatever you want to call it, to do it. Like, put some thought in it. If you don't, if you can't feel comfortable putting your name behind who you voted for, you probably shouldn't be voting. So I am fully behind having the voters, whoever they are. I know Gord Miller just kind of released his, who he's got voted for. And force yourself to pay enough attention that you have a defensible position on who you vote for.
Yeah, I totally agree. At the very least, give us the number one guy you picked. You know, I don't
right.
Okay, I don't need your top 10 necessarily, but tell me who you voted for. Like, who do you believe should win the Hart? That's your number one guy. Who do you think deserves to win the Vezina, the Coach of the Year? What are the chances you're going to say something so outrageous that's going to lead to blowback? Like, if you're relying on Twitter, you know, to be nice about anything, then you're asking for trouble, clearly. But, and you might lead to, there's always debate. I don't know if there's a lock this year. I might be missing one, but I don't know if there's a lock, like, guaranteed this guy is definitely winning the award.
I mean, it feels like Hellebuck for Vezina is a bit of a lock.
He should be.
Or the closest thing to it.
I agree with that.
And, you know, it's a Yossi Carlson thing. It's a Hughes McCarr thing for the Calder. It's what, probably Drysdale, MacKinnon, Panarin for the Hart.
Yep.
Selke is a crapshoot. I mean, it's Bergeron, it's Couturier, Sorelli, it's O'Reilly. I mean, there's a whole bunch of guys in there. But the Selke, I've heard two names come up that you want to talk about causing waves from people who are really smart. One is Zach Aston-Reese in Pittsburgh.
Really?
And and he asked me about my opinion about it, and I'm like, I don't know. I guess I haven't paid enough attention to how he plays, and I don't vote, so I didn't look. But apparently his numbers and his metrics and his stuff is ridiculously good. And so they're like, if it's just about defense, if you want to make a point, it's not about defense to go with offense. It's just about defense, which it kind of has gotten away from. You could go with someone like that. Or Val Nichushkin was making waves because I guess his metrics as a defensive player were also really, really good. So anyways, I mean, that's the one where you could kind of go right off the board if you wanted to be a wild card.
Yeah,
but, yeah, I think
true enough. Selke is the most difficult one to maybe define, right? And
right.
It's not the sexiest award. I guess the Lady Bing is probably the least sexy award. But the Selke, you know, defensive, you're right. Like, I've always had this debate and this conversation actually with Owen Noodles, where they've always been of the impression like the Selke is the second best player in the world. You know, it's almost like the second, or I shouldn't say in the world, but it's like the beyond the Hart nominees. If you're up for the Selke, that means you were like the second Hart winner.
You're a great offensive player, but also good defensively.
But that's not what it's supposed to be. Like,
no.
It's supposed to be defensive player.
It's supposed to be Bob Gainey, not Sergei Fedorov.
Exactly. And anyway, so I don't know who's going to be nominated for those. I would vote Drysdale. I've said that before. I would have Drysdale one. I think the way he performed when McDavid got hurt at the end of the year solidified that for me. He elevated his game, and they had tough games too. They went up the East Coast. They're in Florida, Tampa, and he put up numbers, man. He was great.
I would want to put Panarin up. I would want to.
He would be. I've talked myself into him being number two.
Because
I don't have a ballot, but I would have him number two for me.
He did so much, and like, he had no one to play with. Because he didn't always play. He didn't play with Zibanejad when Zibanejad was rolling. So
he was playing with Strome the majority of the
Strome.
Year.
Strome, yeah. So, but yeah, Drysdale or Panarin, but I'd want to put Panarin to try to think I'm smart, but either one would be fine with me.
Well, it's a good example though of how every year you fall into the same trap, or I do anyway, where I naturally go with the best player in the world and assume that's the guy who's going to get there. And last year, Kucherov wins the MVP. I think most people thought Kucherov would do it again this year. He still had a very good year when you look at it. Slow start,
he's
but
coming.
Got going.
Yeah.
His numbers are still off the charts. But he's not up in the top five. He's not going to be nominated. And McDavid likely won't be nominated. And he's not going to win it. That's 2 years in a row where you haven't had McDavid or Sid or Ovi, you know, winning the award. We're going to have back-to-back winners here that I'm not sure we saw happening prior to the season. Right, I don't think people thought Kucherov was going to win it before last season, once he got rolling, it was like, all right, look at what this guy's doing and look what this team is doing. Same thing with Draisaitl. Like, if I asked you before the year who on Edmonton's going to win the Hart, I think 10 out of 10 would have said McDavid. Maybe 9 out of 10.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I think everyone acknowledges Draisaitl is a great player.
Great player, but McDavid's better.
But if anyone's got, like, yeah, he'll always be the second best player on his team. And barring a significant long-term injury, to think of a situation where Draisaitl, even if he put up a great numbers, one, he'd have more points than McDavid, because I don't think anyone thought that would be the case. And two, that he'd even get as much credit or more than McDavid for the success he had. Even if he had more goals and maybe more points, I still think people would want to give it to McDavid. And that's not the case this year at all. I think he's kind of taken a step out there, especially given the fact that they didn't play together for, you know, the second half of the prorated year, when it was him and Nugent Hopkins and Kyler Yamamoto, and they were really pushing the offense as much as McDavid. So good for him. I mean, that big old paddle kind of out of the shadows of Connor McDavid, and turned into one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, it's a Crosby Malkin kind of redux, right? Like, that's
it is.
Feels like it. Malkin got his Hart. Now, Sid was out the majority of the year that year, I believe, but he won the Hart, Ross. He won the Hart. He deserved it, carried that team. And McDavid played, you know, a majority of the season and had a great year. But I do think Draisaitl was better. I still, obviously, if I'm building a team tonight, I would take McDavid. But Draisaitl is a lot closer. And I have appreciation for his overall game that maybe I didn't have a couple of years ago. Right. Like, they're 5-on-3. He's out there taking the draw and killing penalties.
He's 23, 24 minutes a night.
Huge.
And, like, I know he's not me, I'm not him, but like, it's a lot for any forward, especially a centerman, to play anywhere remotely north of 21.
Yeah.
It wears you down over time, and he's able to keep doing it night after night.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Craig Button. Craig, we're talking about the awards, and, you know, I would have Draisaitl winning the Hart. I think he's going to win it. But in terms of, you know, where he stands with McDavid, is he close to being on par? I mean, how do you analyze the two and the importance of both in Edmonton?
Well, just listening to you guys chat before I came on, I mean, I think the Crosby-Malkin comparison as a duo is apropos. And, you know, I don't. There's no question that Malkin is a superstar, but Crosby's in his own class, and that doesn't take anything away from Malkin. And, you know, I think McDavid's in his own class, and that doesn't take anything away from Draisaitl. I think the real benefits here are accrued to the Penguins with Crosby and Malkin and to the Edmonton Oilers by having those two guys. And interestingly for me, when I look back, I mean, you had Gretzky and Messier, two of the top players that have ever played, but it wasn't, I mean, Gretzky was better than Messier, but the Edmonton Oilers became a formidable team because of those two guys. That's where Edmonton is trying to head. The Penguins have won 3 Stanley Cups with Sidney and Evgeny Malkin. So to me, there is a difference. But I mean, when you're talking about Hart Trophy winner, Draisaitl was a superstar. He scored 50 goals. Last year, he's got 100 points again. I mean, to me, he's a superstar. But he's not where McDavid's at. Not in my view.
No, he's not. And I don't think anyone would say that. Best player in the world would still always be McDavid, Craig. But would you believe kind of in the, if you're going to have two stars like that, especially that play the same position, that there can be a healthy friction between the two of them? If you think, you know, Forsberg-Sakic or Yzerman-Fedorov or Gretzky-Messier, whoever it might be, where they kind of pushed each other while supporting each other, but they both were kind of wanting to be the best that they could be relative to their teammate?
Yeah, and I love your use of the word healthy, because I think it is healthy. And, you know, Mike, you know this, you know, when you're playing and you're coming in, you're competing. You're competing for your spot, and then you're competing for, you know, your place amongst recognition. Then you see other players come along, right? And then you're competing with them to make sure that you can stay ahead. And that is healthy, and that's what competition, in my view, does for you. So, you know, it's not that you don't have Draisaitl going, oh, geez, you know what, I should be playing as much as McDavid. You don't have McDavid, you know, feeling like, oh, why does he get all the notoriety? I think that they push each other in the manner that you express, in a really healthy way that makes each of them better and, by extension, makes the entire team better.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. Like, everything I've heard about the two of them is they're very close. I think they train together in the summer. Like, I think they're both up in Muskoka training. I think Nurse is a part of that. I've heard that anyway. I'm sure he goes back to Germany, and I'm sure he spends his off season in different ways. But the fact that the two of them came into the league basically at the same time, signed their contract at the same time, and that wasn't an issue. A $4 million chasm was not a big issue, and that's more on Draisaitl than it would be on McDavid. Goes a long way. Like, the two of them are connected. They're there. Mm-hmm. They realize they're going to be there for another 6 or 7 years, and it does not appear to be any issues in terms of who gets the ice, who gets the accolades, and we all know that that's not always an obvious situation, Craig. Doesn't always play out that way.
Well, you think back, and I'll use a different sport example. You think about Shaq and Kobe. Right? When they first started off together, it really wasn't. I mean, despite them having success, there was probably a certain measure of unhealthy friction. And it wasn't until years later, after they both retired, or, you know, Shaq had long retired. And if you recall, there was that moment where Shaq talked about how much Kobe, how important Kobe was to him and to the team, and he had never given Kobe his due. So I know basketball is a little bit more, not a little bit more, a lot more of an individual sport, but I think that there are examples in other sports, or there have been examples in hockey. And part of it, too, is when you have players that are under, that have signed long-term, and they have their contracts established, I think that that helps, too, in terms of, like, well, I should be paid as much as him, I'm an MVP. They can just go and play. And I think that that becomes important. I think it became important for Crosby and Malkin. I think it's just as important for McDavid and Draisaitl in that respect as well.
With Craig Button, so some news came out yesterday, reported anyway. I don't think it's been confirmed by the team, but it sounds like Josh Anderson will not return for the play-in round for Columbus. He's a good player. He's a tough player, Toronto guy, and he will not be playing in that best of five against the Maple Leafs. How significant of a loss do you think that is, Craig?
Here's what I would say. Josh, before he was hurt, was not having what we would call anywhere near an NHL-type season. He was off, obviously, the injury. And to me, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets have functioned at the level they've been at very, very, very well without Josh Anderson. You know, reconstructive shoulder surgery, which is what he had to have, you know, was significant. But I think that, you know, they lost Bobrovsky, they lost Panarin, they lost Josh Anderson, and they haven't missed a beat with respect to the way they play, the way they approach playing. John Tortorella is just not going to allow for it. So, you know, there might have been a little bit of a boost if he could come back and play at the level that we saw him prior to this season, but I don't think they're losing anything by not having him.
Yeah, he was so far away from the form he showed a couple of years ago when he almost had 30. You're right, Craig. And maybe it was the shoulder, whatever it was, but he was not going to be the threat, other than being physical, for sure. But, Craig, as a GM, former GM, and with the change in Buffalo yesterday, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Kevin Adams, a guy I know very well, who's a very smart guy. He's worked a lot of different jobs around hockey, but never been in the front office. How important is experience in some capacity in the front offices? How important is it to do being a GM and the job that Kevin Adams is about to try to undertake?
Well, I agree with you. Kevin is a very intelligent person. And, you know, he's worked in different areas around the Buffalo Sabres with the Pegulas. So the Pegulas feel that he can, you know, set the franchise in a forward motion where there's a clear direction. And, you know, one of the things that a number of people have told me, you know, since the news yesterday is that there was a lot of different silos, and were they as coordinated as they needed to be? And the feeling is that Kevin will absolutely be able to do that. Now, the fact is that, you know, basically the minor league team the minor league coaching group has been jettisoned. The amateur scouting staff has been jettisoned. Mm-hmm. You know, Kevin comes into the job with no, you know, significant hockey management. So the key thing for him, and I really believe, Mike, that smart people know what they don't know. Yeah. And I think that Kevin is smart enough to know, okay, what do I need here? And then he can go about the process. The benefit for the Buffalo Sabres is, the draft isn't going to be till October. They're not going to play, you know, anytime in the near future. doesn't look like the American Hockey League is going to start, you know, under a normal time frame. So it gives Kevin a lot of time now to be able to, you know, search, find what he needs, you know, who are the people, and spend time with it. He doesn't have to rush into it because there really is no time rush on it. But, you know, I believe that Kevin is smart enough and bright enough to understand that. I also believe, too, that Ralph Kruger, with his experience with Southampton for the number of years that he was there, can be a really good aid with Kevin in terms of saying, okay, we need this area. Okay, who are the people that can do that? Okay, we need this area, and then they can proceed. I mean, I think that that's important to have that the benefit of Ralph and, you know, the business experience of Kevin in different areas to really understand we got to be cohesive, we got to be coordinated, and we all have to be, you know, directing our efforts in the same direction.
Greg, if you had to put a paycheck down on one of these two teams making the playoffs in the next 3 years, where would your money go, Buffalo or Ottawa?
Talk to them after June 26th draft or the lottery or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you got to get there first, man. The gambler, man. I got to get that cash now, Craig.
Yeah. So here we go. Jack Eichel's a superstar in the league, okay? Like, right now, the Ottawa Senators have nobody like that, okay? They might draft a player or two that might be able to get there. They're not there. You know, Rasmus Dahlin is probably just a little bit behind Thomas Chabot right now. And I'm trying to go center defense. The Buffalo Sabres have a franchise player in Eichel. They have that defenseman who's only 20 years old in Dahlin, who I have no doubt is going to be right there in that category. Chabot to me is elite. I think that the Ottawa Senators have a lot more depth around them. They both have big questions in the net. And, you know, to make the playoffs in a very competitive Atlantic division, a very competitive Eastern Conference, that's what I'm going to be watching for. I think the coaching, you know, with Ralph and DJ is, you know, equally good. But who's going to get the goaltender and push their and allow their team to push ahead a little bit further? That's what I think it'll come down to. And I don't think either one of those teams has that guy in their, like, you know, ready to do that right now. We could talk about Allmark, you know, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who was the world junior goalie of the tournament when Finland won in Vancouver. You know, he's still a little bit away. Allmark hasn't served it, but if I like the depth of the Ottawa Senators, and I like where they're headed, and with two more picks in this draft, and with a pretty good blue line that I think is going to mature together, I'm going to go with the Ottawa Senators. All that being said.
Wow.
Wow, despite like Jack. And he totally set us up like he was going Buffalo, and then he just shifted gears at the end there. I was going to say, how much would your decision be different, because I thought you were going to Buffalo, depending on what happens next week. So maybe just how huge, how monumental could this be for Ottawa, the draft lottery? They could get 1-2. The worst they could do, Craig, is 3-4. Is that right? Or 4-5, whatever it is.
Yeah, they could drop out of the top three.
You know, they could conceivably go Lafreniere, Byfield. I mean, they could revamp their entire franchise potentially next week.
Yeah, well, and there's no question about it. And, you know, you think about this too, Mike. Like, when I talk about the depth, like Brady Tkachuk's a good player. Josh Norris, who was the rookie of the year in the American Hockey League, he's older. He's a good player. You know, Batherson, I think, is going to be a really good player. We've talked about Chabot. They got Branstrom in the minors. Lassie Thompson, who was their first-round pick, played in Finland. So they got some really good players in and around. Well, when you can add the quality of those two players, or a Stützle, or a Perfetti, or even a Drysdale if they want to go on the blue line. Like, wherever they go in that 5-6 range, like, and I'm just putting all those players lumped in together, whether it's 1-2 with Lafreniere and Byfield, they're going to get high-end quality players. And I think that allows you to push forward significantly. That helps the entire group be that much better.
Yeah. I mean, if they end up 1-2, when was the last time that happened? I guess the Sedins, they had to trade up to get it. They didn't have it.
They went 2-3.
That was 2-3. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, the last time there was 1-2, I think it was Montreal Canadiens back in, when they still had the rights to the first two French Canadians.
Territory rights,
and,
yeah.
And I'm thinking 1969, and I'm pretty sure that was Réjean Rouhl and Marc Tardif.
Okay. Not bad.
Craig. I knew we had you on here for a reason, because Hayes and I were going to be like, what? Yeah, 69?
No, you could have said
no
anybody.
No chance.
I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, well, Gilbert Perreault was the spin of the wheel for the Buffalo Sabres in 70, right?
Right.
But I think that's the last time, but the draft was done in a much different way than it is now, you know, and Sam Pollock was taking advantage of that scenario for the Montreal Canadiens, and then trading with teams and getting the rights to guys like Lafleur and trading for 5 first round draft picks. I mean, it's unbelievable. Did you guys know this? That in 1976, Sam Pollock traded for Colorado's first round draft pick in 1980?
No. So how did that was that LaFleur? Like, is that how that all played out?
No. Well, I'm talking in 76. They drafted Doug Wickenheiser first overall in 1980.
Right.
You know what the think? Mm-hmm. You know what the thinking was? You know how shrewd that Sam Pollock was? You know what the thinking was?
Did they think it was Gretzky?
Yep, because that would have been his draft year.
Wow.
Oh, crafty.
That's pretty smart, man.
Crafty.
That's
you're eyeballing a guy at 14 years old. That is ultimate tanking for McDavid.
To be fair, the Habs had a pretty awful, you know, decade in the 70s, so they deserve some help to start the 80s.
Oh, yeah, they needed a lot. Yeah, they needed some reinforcements.
Yeah, like, can you imagine that?
But Sam, I mean, he traded for the pick that ended up being LaFleur. I mean, he traded for picks that ended up being Risebrough and Trombley. He ended up with lots of first-round picks, and some of them didn't turn out. You know, Robin Sadler didn't turn out, and, you know, you look back, Cam Connor didn't turn out, like, in terms of the star power. But Sam was always thinking, and because the Montreal Canadiens, and you think about where he came from with the card, like with the C card, where they had to go and scout players at 14 to put them on their on the C card at that time. So, you know, he would have been in a mindset with their scouts that, hey, who's the next great kid that could be coming along? We knew about Gretzky at that time. But, I mean, honestly, it worked out that he ended up with the first overall pick. But he was thinking 3 years ahead. That's unbelievable.
That is some checkers when everyone else is playing chess at best, or vice versa.
That's true, man. All right, Craig, good history lesson, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Yeah, you guys have a great day. Thanks.
There's Craig Button joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland or MapleToyota.com, where you can buy online. Yeah, that I did not know about that history, but that is brilliant because, when Gretzky was 14, everyone knew. Like, everyone knew he was coming, and everyone knew what was going on.
I don't understand then. Why would Colorado make that trade?
Well, they're probably
knew.
They're probably thinking, I don't know if we're going to be dead last in 80. Yeah, exactly. You know, because remember the Leafs, I hate to bring this up for Leaf fans, but they did something similar with the Lindros trade. They traded away their first-round pick in the Lindros year, and it was the same thing. Everyone knew Lindros was coming. Like, everyone knew he was coming, and he was going first overall. Like, when Lindros was 15.
Especially Toronto. It's in his backyard.
Exactly. He's playing in Oshawa. Everyone knew it, and they got rid of the pick. They traded the pick. And that was, I think that was the Curvers deal. And they didn't end up finishing last. They finished third last, and we all know who Jersey ended up picking at 3. Scotty Niedermeyer. Which arguably, I would say Niedermeyer had a better career than Lindros.
Unquestionably.
Yeah.
Injury.
When you look back on it.
Yeah, for injury reasons, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
One guy was a no-brainer Hall of Famer, and Scott Niedermeyer, and Eric was a debated Hall of Famer just because he's his shortened career.
Right, exactly. And when he was at his, you know, apex, he was a machine. You know that.
But. And remember Andreas Dackel? Mm-hmm. Little number 10, I think, for Ottawa, where the Jofa bucket, and Eric got him one time on a forecheck. Someone find this clip and send it to me, and squished his head on a hit against the glass, almost popped it off his shoulders, and Dacky was bleeding from everywhere. It was like encapsulated Eric at his most frightening, where I guess it was legal at the time, and he almost permanently ruined a guy with that hit.
He has to be the most feared forechecking forward in NHL history.
And you could hear him 75 feet away. There was nothing subtle or quiet about what he was doing. When he came chopping after you,
Yeah.
You knew he was coming. Yeah,
and he wasn't coming in for a stick check. He had no interest in it. He was going to crush you.
He was mean, dirty.
Yeah, he was.
I didn't like playing against him.
No, and you didn't have to skate backwards into the corner. And, you know, when he did a chip and chase on you, you're like, I'll go for a change.
Go ahead. You go get it first. I'll hit you really hard. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Exactly.